Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle right here on LA Talk Radio.
Boy, are you ever.
You are.
And you're back.
Yes,
you're back. I read that on our promo card.
I'm bigger than ever. You're wearing a hat today.
I am.
You never wear hats.
Not very often.
You were running late, and you didn't get a chance to wash your hair.
That's correct.
I know you. I know you like the back of my hand. But, you know, you can pull off a hat.
You think?
I mean, there are people that can wear hats, and there are people that can't. I can't wear a hat, because I wear a hat, and it's all nose.
All nose.
Yeah, because it's already nose.
And you look like a cockatoo.
I look like a cockatiel. Look like a cockatoo or three, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Already.
But no, see, the whole thing about being lucky enough to be past 50 and still have my hair is that it's the nose
so
offsetting swoosh. Yes. See, that's what this is.
I see. Okay.
It's the nose offsetting swoosh, which means if I walk
Can you
into
say that
a
word
wall,
again?
No, I'm not going to. But the whole idea is if I walk into a wall, my hair has to hit before my nose
which
does,
is always a good protective device.
Yes,
isn't
exactly.
It?
Exactly.
The swoosh. I like that word.
You know,
I'm going to use it.
This is how bored I am. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Dirty Dancing, the classic story on stage, tells the story of 17-year-old Francis Baby Houseman, who is on vacation during the summer of 1963 in New York's Catskill Mountains with her older sister and parents. Mesmerized by the racy dance moves and pounding rhythms she discovers in the resort staff quarters, Baby can't wait to be part of the scene, especially when she catches sight of Johnny Castle, the resort's sexy dance instructor. Passions ignite, and Baby's life changes forever when she is thrown into the deep end as Johnny's leading lady, both on stage and off. This timeless love story features the hit songs Hungry Eyes, Hey Baby, Do You Love Me, and the heart-stopping I've Had the Time of My Life. London's Sunday Express says this crowd-pleasing stage adaptation hits the jackpot.
Dirty Dancing, the classic story on stage, began an 8-week stage workshop in Manhattan in the fall of 2001. It was first performed at the Theatre Royal, in Sydney, Australia, in November 2004, before embarking on a hugely successful tour of Australia and New Zealand. A new production opened at the Theatre Neue Flora in Hamburg, Germany, in March 2006, where it broke records for achieving the highest advance in European history. Today, we are joined by three of the cast members of this acclaimed production, currently playing at the Pantages Theatre through February 21st. Joining us on the telephone very shortly, we will welcome Alex Scolari, but right here in studio, we are delighted to have Doug Carpenter and Rachel Boone.
Yay!
Hello, guys.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. Happy to have
good
you.
Good to have you both here.
Thank you.
I saw these two folks last night.
I know
these two
you did.
Young people.
Yeah.
And Alex as well, who's I'm not seeing Alex now, but
she's adorable.
Did see her last night.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah.
Enjoyed the show tremendously.
Good. Yes. As did I on opening night. It was fun.
Wonderful. You went on opening night?
I did.
Why do you get the opening night tickets? And then you, like, later in the run, you go, yeah, Paul, here's a little something for you.
You weren't here for the opening night.
I wasn't here?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, it's just as well, because if I saw opening night, I wouldn't have been able to see Rachel, because Rachel has just taken over the role now.
That's true.
Although she's got a long history with the show. But
you started on the 9th of February, I think, right?
Correct, as
Baby.
There
you go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome.
That's Baby. Yes. Before that, she was Johnny. It was one of the, gender bending, you know. Yeah.
I see.
Yes.
Oh, my.
Before we talk to them and pull up the electric telephone to talk to Alex, Michael, how was your week?
You know, it was great. Thanks for asking, Paul. We, annually, I do a little something called LA's Next Great Stage Star, which is this musical theater competition that I've been producing since 2006, and it is our 10-year anniversary. And it is sponsored by Princess Cruises now, and it, all the bells and whistles, and we're in a theater, and yeah, it's very exciting, and our winner was crowned on Monday night out of the 20 contestants, and got a little nice little prize of $2,500.
Nice.
Cash prize. Well, that's not all, though, on the money side, because Marco Gomez, our friend who's been on the show before, the artistic director of Doma Theater here, pulled me aside and said, how much is the prize? And I said, $2,500. He said, on behalf of Doma Theater, we'd like to give her $2,000 more. So she picked up $4,500.
And that's in addition to all of the...
All of the other...
And it's not... I mean, the networking things and all that.
She had a launch of her professional career. And also this year, for the very... Because of the anniversary, for the very first time, a wonderful songwriter friend of mine, Gary Lynn Floyd, who's been a guest on this show, and myself, I wanted to have a special event for the winner. So we wrote together a song. He wrote the music. He is a wonderful composer and a performer himself of musical theater and other types of music. He wrote the music, and together we co-wrote the lyrics. And we went into the studio, did all the tracks in advance, and Gary sang, performed it live at the finale.
Oh, wow.
And it went over like amazing. It's called I'm Where I Belong, kind of based on the emotional experience of going through something like Stage Star and trying to reach your dream, which is, you know, on the other side there of having a life in musical theater.
Is he recorded
it? Lovely people.
Because we should play it on the air.
Yes, we should. Here's the deal. We wrote it.
Or I could present it if you like. I could do my own Tom Waitsian, Joe Cocker version.
We might have to record a version like that, because the winner is now coming into the studio with us, and she is recording it, and we're releasing it as her first single.
Oh, great. So we'll have
formed a publishing company, and we're putting it all together, and it's part of her winnings. So
wow. You
Maggie
have,
Randall.
I wish I had your life. I mean, you're so exciting, and you do all these different things. You know what I did this week? I cleaned my grout.
Did you?
That's what I did. Life on the
but
edge
it looks
with
better,
Paul.
Doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes.
There you go. Well, that's
it's,
the bottom
I, line. Well, that's one thing I could say. I have nicer grout than you do.
All right.
But that's my week. That's all I got, man.
I think there's something nicer than grout that's on the end of that telephone, right?
Yes, there is. Well, isn't that lovely, too? What
yeah,
a segue.
Yes.
You're better than grout, Alex. Michael, would you...
Of the very highest quality.
Our first guest is delighted to be making her national tour debut with Dirty Dancing. Her past credits include Jason Robert Brown's 13 at the Mark Taper Forum, as well as the Los Angeles premiere of Big the Musical. Portraying Lisa Houseman, please welcome Alex Scolari. Let me get the little applause button there for her.
Yeah.
There she is.
Hello.
And you know what?
I'm here.
Yes. We love you, Alex, already, because you're from Sherman Oaks, aren't you?
I am. I'm a Valley girl through and through. So happy to be home.
There you go.
So, Alex, if to jump right into it, you're a Valley girl, but you're playing this teenager at a Catskill, the Catskill Resort, 1963. Was that all created by you, or did you have any sort of role models you had in mind in fabricating that character?
Well, I think actually just from being from L.A., I went to high school in Sherman Oaks, south of the boulevard, called the Buckley School, and there were many real-life Lisa Houseman at my high school, so
okay.
I definitely got inspiration from the fashionistas that I know, but I think I always say that in the show, in that time period, in 1963, I feel like Lisa Houseman kind of wants to be that ideal classy woman, and for this time, that would have been, you know, Jackie O and someone like that. So, you know, I pull inspiration from everywhere, but yeah, definitely being from LA has helped a lot.
You know, and watching the show last night, I always like when I see the shows right before we speak to the folks from it. It's a tough role you have there. It's really sort of a tough balance you have to draw with being that, you know, this great sort of comedic character, but not being too, you know, over the top with it. And you really draw that balance well. I hope you've been hearing that from people.
Thank you. That really does mean a lot to me.
Oh, don't thank me. I'm just reading the cards you sent. You sent this information.
Great.
I'm just reading what you sent, okay?
What a lot of people don't know, and actually most people in the show haven't really seen me dance, but that's kind of what I grew up doing the most. I started when I was 5 years old, and I was a competition dancer. I was in the original, right in North Hollywood at Millennium Dance Complex, the original junior company. So that's kind of that's what got me into musical theater, is my connection through dance. And obviously in the show, Lisa Houseman is just not the best dancer, to say the least. She's a bit of a train wreck, if you will. So it's been, when I went into the show, I was in rehearsals, and, you know, the associate choreographer was like, you know, you look like a good dancer who's dancing bad, and we just need you to be this genuinely off-center, unbalanced human, because if you were really a non-dancer, you wouldn't be a good dancer dancing bad. So I had to kind of work and find that balance, but now I just totally get to have fun with it. And I think just putting on those, I have wobbly heels in that number, and that's something that just gets me into character right there, because I can't even find my balance myself.
And that is, you're talking about toward the end of the show?
The talent?
Yeah, that is hilarious.
My Hula Hana number.
Yes.
Hilarious.
What was it about that in the 60s that everything was about Hawaii, like it was just the greatest thing in the 60s? Like you had
the ultimate destination.
Yeah. Was that about. Maybe it's because air travel was just so prominent, and it was like the first time people could go there. But you look back at that time, you look at the albums of the time, the Johnny Mathis albums, and everyone's got like a Hawaii theme or something.
Well, I think because also.
Yeah, the Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah.
I don't think the other, oceanic destinations had really been developed by that point in time as being a go-to.
You just said oceanic destinations in casual conversation.
Yes.
Man, you're smart. Me? Just grout. That's all I do. Lisa, how long have you been involved in the show? On this whole tour?
I graduated from University of Michigan in May, and I moved to New York, and I found out that I had this audition kind of 24 hours later. So it was really, really super fast, and I started rehearsals in June, and then I'm up in June. So coming up on not quite a year yet, but in June it'll be a year.
And are you having as much fun as these two people? We were speaking to these your two castmates here in studio, and it just seems very familial and just a really nice group of people. Are you having, not that you could say you wouldn't, if there's no way other way to answer this question, but are you having
that
as much
horrible.
Fun as they seem to be?
No, I am having the time of my life. I thought you'd never heard that one before.
No, yeah.
Like every interview I somehow have to end it with, you'll have the time of your life. But
and you've never felt this way before, right?
I
seriously
am. What?
And you've never felt this way before.
I've never felt this way before. And honestly, I mean, I owe it all to you guys for this interview. No,
right,
but I mean,
there,
it's so much fun. Groove is incredible. Oh, and,
she's,
you know, everyone is just so, so, so fun. I think it's a perfect experience, you know, especially I'm so lucky to be here. I'm so honored. Right out of school, I know it's like pinch me, but
no.
I love traveling and obviously doing the show 8 times a week. It's so fun.
Well,
so Alex, though, you're being from California and then taking that trip to New York and getting work so quickly, you really haven't experienced New York and living in New York City.
Yeah, I haven't. I kind of lucked out because I hadn't found an apartment yet, and this whole situation would have been much harder if I did. But I moved to New York, and then my class, we have a senior showcase at Michigan, so the whole class of 20 musical theater BFA seniors go to New York, and then we do like a showcase, and we sing a minute to a minute and a half song that showcases our talents. And I did, my number was called I Can't Concentrate, and it was like this funny number, and I got to dance in it, and a bunch of guys came out and it was great. But anyway, 24 hours later, you get an email. Every single person from my class gets an email with all the people who want to meet with you. And it could be casting agents, it could be casting directors, it could be someone that, you know, a TV film guy who just kind of wants to get to know you for future projects. It could be anything. And so this is where I got that audition. So I had about 3 to 4 callbacks for this, you know, once every week, and then I was out of there. But yeah, I mean, I had assumed, you know, I feel like everyone who studies musical theater assumes, oh yeah, I'm going to go to New York and live there for a few years at least, but you never know what's going to happen. And I can't say it enough. I'm so lucky to be on this tour.
Well, that's great. It's nice to hear.
No, it's nice to see you working in your hometown on a stage such as the Pantages, which is one of the most beautiful theaters in the country, perhaps if not the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. But
and you know, before it was a theater, it was a barbershop. Did you know that?
No way.
It was a very luxurious barbershop.
It's the biggest barbershop yes, in the world. Okay.
Alex, we're gonna throw the mic to these two folks that are here with us, but thank you so much for joining us and taking the time. We're sorry that we're limited on the number of people we can bring into the studio, because we would have had all three of you in here today, but we thank you for joining us via telephone.
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you so much. Have a good day, guys, and I'm happy you enjoyed the show.
All right.
Thank you.
We did indeed. Thank you, Alex.
Nice video.
Bye. Thanks.
Did I just call her Lisa? Did I say Lisa?
You did.
I did say Lisa.
Yeah.
As soon as you said Alex, I said Lisa a moment ago. And I can't deceive people. I can't let stuff like that go by. I have to own my error. Well, so, Alex, I apologize for calling you Lisa. Maybe I'm looking at the cast list too much.
She's probably in her car by now.
She is. Oh, yeah, she's like, anyway, so we'll fix that by introducing Dave Carpenter.
That's right.
Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, portrays Billy Kostecki in Dirty Dancing, the classic story on stage. His past credits include South Pacific, Most Happy Fella, Oklahoma, and Miss Saigon. He also holds the distinction of being the only singer to have won both the American Traditions Competition and the Latalania Competition. Please welcome the one and only Doug Carpenter.
Hi.
How are you? Sorry, a little hiccup there. Carpenter. It's Latalania, isn't it? Is it Latalania?
It is Latalania.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
what
did I say? Lata?
Lata. No, you said Lisa.
No,
Lisa Lenya, yeah, of the Southampton Lenyas. How are you, Doug?
I'm doing good. How are you?
You having a good time?
I'm having a great time.
You got some pipes, pal.
Thanks, man.
I was watching the show last night, boy. If it won't embarrass you, if it won't embarrass you to answer this question, do you usually get that response at the end of that little vocal curlicues that you do?
Yeah. I mean, it's the 11 o'clock numbers. It's sort of, you know, the one set piece in the show, I think, where it's just sort of like guys singing up on the top of the stairs.
Yeah.
You know? So it's set up like that, I think, a little bit, too.
And I think that it should be set up like that because, you know, we don't get to really know too much of your character in the earlier part of the show. But
right. I just give exposition in the first half
exactly.
and then come out and sing my face off in the second half.
Yeah. But I must tell you, I've known Doug for a while, right? We've known each other since
a long time, almost 10 years.
Yeah, now. Exactly. Almost. And he's always been a fabulous singer, but he just knocked it out in this show. I mean, such a great opportunity for you to really pull it out in those two spots. I mean, and then we're treated to not only that solo that you have, but then at the end of the show with the title song and just wailing on that.
Yeah, giving away all my secrets.
With that lovely young lady who you sing it with on the other side of the stage there.
Yes, Adrian Walker.
Adrian does a wonderful job too. So
I actually wanted to call her out because the cast is uniformly strong, and I know that people always say that because it's an easy way to address, but it is an incredibly strong cast, and there's great talent on that stage. But she did, to be a standout in a cast this good really says something, and she's wonderful.
Yeah.
She's really just great. I was going to ask you something when Michael was talking about this. When you talk about doing the exposition in the first half and coming back and doing the singing, there has to be a great sort of fun freedom with not being saddled with the narrative of this. Why are you laughing?
I just think people would be entertained if they watched Doug the entire show. Well, he has his own three-act play the entire time, and sometimes I mainly just watch him in the background because he's so good.
Okay.
He doesn't get bored. He comes up with all kinds of things to do.
Ah, okay.
There's a lot of little bits. I've been here on the show for a year and a half, and so I am...
It's brilliant.
Can you share them, or is it, would prefer not to?
I mean, you just gotta kind of watch because it's all tiny little things. Trying to get dates with people and dancing and like it's a constant like try and fail for Billy like the entire show.
Okay,
it's through that in the entire show. I mean,
we that are performers sort of laugh about things like that because it does entertain us, especially if you're in a long run. But at the end of the day, it also keeps it fresh for you because you're genuinely there. You're doing something the character would be doing. So it's keeping it pure. Yeah,
absolutely. And that's what I sort of learned. I mean, doing a long show like this is my first time doing something this long, is that really living that moment for the first time each night is what's going to make this bearable for a year and a half, two years. You know what I mean? Like trying to make fun of the show and trying to like just do my job is the worst thing I could possibly do for my happiness.
Right.
I just
got
to like keep trying to find something new and discover what's, you know.
But different. That's not uncommon for you here too, because you did Life Could Be a Dream.
And I did 100 performances of Life Could Be a Dream.
It's a long run for you.
Yeah, that is a pretty long
and
run.
And by the standards of Equity Waiver Theater, that's certainly
It's incredibly long. But I'm on almost, 550 now of Dirty Dancing. I mean, 100 and 500 it's a big difference, I realized.
Yeah, it is. I did. I'm far older than both of you combined, but I did a one-person show for 9 years, and I did 1,400 performances.
Wow.
And let me tell you, that is a busman's tour of hell. By the time you
which
get to
which is how Paul and I met.
Yeah,
1,400.
Yeah, because and one person thing. So that was just like you want to talk about having to keep it fresh. You know, you really just make that audience your scene partner because he just can't. And it was a direct addressed show too. It was like, you know, characters and stuff.
Right.
Yeah. So believe me, I know from keeping it fresh. I was the Ziploc of shows. I hope to be. Anyway.
You know what I wanted to discuss here today, especially, and we did talk about it a little bit before we went live, is the tongue-in-cheek aspect of this production. Mm. And, I mean, there's some amazing things going on in the show from our modern, you know, technology ability in musical theater now, and certainly in touring shows it is employed. And it's pretty spectacular, but... you know, let's harken back to the film. I mean, the show is very much like the film in the sense that it really follows it, you know, from beginning to end. And the film was, you know, kind of, as you said earlier, a wink behind the...
Oh, yeah, sort of a wink behind the smile type thing. Yeah.
I mean, you had to take it with the right intention, you know, to really accept it. And clearly, on opening night, and it must be like this every performance for you, that audience, you know, was sitting in the palms of your hand, screaming at the end, just not because it was opening night, I think. That happens every night, doesn't it?
They're pretty much.
I can't imagine it wouldn't. Because you play into these things that we're talking about, you know, from the technical aspects of it and some of the things that happen. And I don't want to really talk about what those are, because I think that people need to go and see the show and enjoy it.
The fun is having it happen without...
And you just said the operative word, fun. It is so much fun, you know, to sit there.
When you have something like this that's such a pop culture piece, you know, and these characters are pop culture icons that some of us grew up with or some people discovered later, depending on how old you are, there's a camaraderie of shared experience with the audience. So when certain lines are said or certain things happen, once again, not to give anything away, you know, it's like it's like putting on comfortable shoes.
Right.
You know, it's just like, oh, I remember that, you know. So you have nostalgia, but you also have what these young folks do so well in this show is, and you mentioned this, Doug, before we started, it acknowledges the show, but it never makes the slightly kitschy nature of the film, it never makes that a butt of the joke. Like the story's never poked fun at. It's just sort of like, you know, tongue planted firmly in cheek with some of this stuff.
Right, we're trying very hard to stay away from camp. We're trying to, you know, obviously play the real truth and honesty of this, you know, whole show. But at the same time, you know, it can't take itself too seriously. So, like, the show is a little bit self-aware, but we never actually sort of, like, you know, try and shove it down people's throats
because
you know, it is a very, you know, like beautiful love story, and it needs to, you know, we pay honor that, you know, that story.
It is, and the other thing that Michael pointed out with the technical aspects are presented. This is something that I don't think people that aren't involved in theater or producing primarily know about. You know, when you make a film, you don't make a film with the idea that it's going to go on to become a musical, go onto stages, and have to travel across the country. You make the movie you want to make. So you have things that take place, in a lake or things like that, because your end game is not a theater. It's a screen.
Right.
So the way that this does that and takes those elements, those very cinematic elements, with these scenes that people know and love, and present it, part of the fun is not only the tongue-in-cheek aspect, but part of the fun, too, is, how they pulled that off. What fun it is that how well they executed that. And even when they can't, when things would involve, say, I don't know, an automobile or something like that, even when you don't have that option, it's just like, you know, God love them for just like, they're committed all the way to the
totally,
end.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. Totally. And I think that Christopher Tierney, who plays Johnny Castle, is probably the most serious character involved in the show. Mm-hmm. And for him to be able to pull that off, mm-hmm. as you said, Doug, there's a fine line between, not taking it over the top.
Not going camp with it.
And I think he does that masterfully, actually, because of the subtleness of what he's doing. And the audience just, he gets the laugh. He doesn't even have to work for it. I mean, mm-hmm. he just does it, right? Right. So, and he's spectacular, by the way. Does he also have an understudy that shares the stage or no?
He does.
He does.
The understudy will only go on if he has a personal day or if he's sick. But they don't flip-flop or share shows.
Right, I see. Okay.
I was going to actually understudy the role.
What a dancer this guy is.
I was going to understudy the role, but I had a conflict.
What was it?
I can't sing or dance.
Wow.
Time.
I did some YouTube research on the show and some of the publicity that has been done throughout the country during the tour. And, of course, he's used for that. And he gets on these morning shows with these female co-anchors.
Oh, yes.
And they are... Good Lord, drooling over this guy.
He's pretty charming.
Can you blame them?
And I guess not. And he's, of course, teaching them to dance. I don't know if he does that on every show, but probably.
Yeah.
And they are no better at the end than they were at the beginning, but he's good.
Oh, right. Well, I mean, just one of the things that happened. We're lucky enough by promoting these shows or being invited to these shows to talk about them on the air that we get aisle seats at the theater, and I was right on the aisle where he came down, he walks down the bomb to get to the stage. And the women around me, it was like he was four of the Beatles. You know, it was just like, this whole shriek.
He got applause as he
He gets does that happen often?
Yeah, every night.
Really?
Yeah. In his entrance, too, get lots of cat calls. And,
But, I would imagine that this show is one of the great, it would be one of the great bachelorette party shows.
Oh, for sure.
Lots of group sales.
Yes.
Well, you must have a blast, being in the framework of something like this. That's not like Les Mis or something like that, where it's so heavy and whatnot. Still beautiful, but fun.
Yeah,
fun. That's
really and quite often we hear that we say fun as just sort of a general qualifier with things that it's fun, but I mean it is just that, and it's been and the director should be called out. I don't have the director's name.
James Towell.
That awareness and that I love to see things where the director trusts the audience enough to get it with a subtle thing like the choices that were made in this mm-hmm. this style that we're talking about. It's really it's nice to see. I like when they give the audience credit like that.
What's the actual? Do anybody know the actual year this movie was? I don't think it's in the press notes. The actual
1987.
Yeah. And how old were you? You must have been a child in a crib.
I wasn't
not even
quite
born
here yet.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you probably the
I
same.
Was here. I was
you were?
1985.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Wow. So young, though.
Yeah. Very I mean, young. I probably wasn't watching the movie. When
no, not at all. But did you ever see it before you got this job? Before you even knew you were in line for this thing?
Dirty Dancing is, like you said, a cultural phenomenon. It's a cult favorite. I mean, we watch this in choir tours, and I mean, it's on TV all the time. I mean, very few people who come see the show have not seen it before. Right. Though I have heard from quite a few people who have said they've never seen the show and they loved it as well. But part of what's lovely about the show is just like to relive all the wonderful joy that you
have. Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the great coming of age stories.
It is.
And the only thing that I don't like about it, and I will say this, is that it's not the show, it's the script. I went to college in New Paltz, and New Paltz doesn't fare well in the show. Bad things happen in New Paltz. But because I actually performed when I was in college. I worked with my friend Jeff Ayers. We had a juggling comedy troupe thing that we did, and we performed at Catskill Hotels while we were there. They were still functioning, so we performed at the Granite Hotel and a couple of others because it's right there. You know, we're New Paltz.
What kind
right
of an
there.
Act did you have?
We had a thing called the Disposable Giggle Twins, and we did like Monty Python type skits, but we also did very intricate juggling, six club passes and torches and all this stuff. We're bringing audience members up and juggling around them and all this, and it was a blast. But I really felt it was really a pleasure to sort of catch the tail end of that, you know, that style of comedy, the Borscht Belts, you know, sure. The Catskill Resort.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's all gone now. Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of a shame actually because it was pretty.
It was a proving ground for right. comedy. Yeah. I mean, so, everyone.
So many people, Buddy Hackett, yeah. all those kinds of.
Oh, Milton Berle,
all of them. Well, we should tell people how to go see this, and we'll
should
tell them a second time before we're off the air, but. Again, we're talking about Dirty Dancing, the U.S. national tour of the classic story on stage. February, it's already in progress, of course. It goes through February 21st at the Hollywood Pantages Theater. And that is located in the heart of Hollywood, literally 6233 Hollywood Boulevard. And you must know where that is. And if you don't, it's easy to find, and you should make it a point of getting there. Tuesday through Friday at 8 p.m., Saturday at 2 p.m. and 8 p.m., Sunday at 1 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. And individual tickets. Now, this is the coolest part. Start as low as $29.
I know, it's nuts.
To see a big, splashy Broadway show like this. Amazing. Yep. Ages 12 and up, children under 5 will not be admitted to the theater, and all patrons must have a ticket regardless of age. So go to HollywoodPantages.com for your tickets online, or go to the telephone, 800-982-2787. You can also try the Hollywood Pantages box office, which is open daily at 10 a.m., and all Ticketmaster outlets. And as we said earlier, it must attract groups, and they certainly will make provision for discounts on that of 10 or more.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on with this lovely lady to my right who has been so patient here. Our next guest is delighted to be playing a character that has become a pop culture icon. She counts among her credits Spring Awakening, Hello Dolly, and Guys and Dolls, as well as the national tour of Cats. She holds a BFA from FSU and is a charter member of ADTTINPBIAC, which stands for Actors Devoted to the Idea of Nobody Putting Baby in a Corner. Uh-huh. Please welcome Rachel Booth.
Thank you.
Rachel.
I need
how
to
are
write
you?
That down. That was good.
No, I added that. I was just trying to be fun and festive.
I like it.
So added that in there, which is, I mean, everyone, of course, knows that moment is coming, but it doesn't lessen it when it does. No, I'm not revealing anything with
yes,
that, but it's
no,
just like
true.
He walks across that stage and you just, it's like setting up that softball, that high lob softball is coming in and just like, and yeah. just hits it right out. So I think your tale is an interesting one for, we have a lot of young actors that listen to the show and follow their own path and their own journey. You're just stepping into this role, but you certainly paid your dues over the years with all the many hats you wore. Could you share that with our listeners?
I am. Yeah. I started with Dirty Dancing. I started with the show in the summer of 2014. Mm-hmm. So I was in New York for the 4 weeks of rehearsals, and I was in the ensemble, and I understudied Baby and Lisa. So I was with the show for a year and a half in that track.
Okay.
And then it was my time to go. And then the baby that they had now, Jillian Abbott, who's one of my dear friends, her contract was up and they needed another baby. And so they called me back. And I got to come back and play the role. And I'm very excited about that.
And did you get to play Lisa with any frequency? Like, which one did you do more of?
I did. I went on for Baby more.
Okay.
Because Lisa, I feel like, is not as challenging of a track, and our Lisa didn't get sick very often
okay.
or take very much vacation. But I did get to do her a couple times.
Yeah.
And they're both so fun.
Because really, in thinking back on it, there's really, if you're on stage most of the time, if I remember correctly, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely your tale.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And how's that?
It's good. I forget how tiring it is, actually. Yeah. And I will always say that being an ensemble member, I was always like, oh man, we work so much harder in the ensemble. Being in the ensemble is so much harder. And it is physically. I mean, the dancers in our show do not stop. And the dancing is incredible. Sure. And it's so high energy. And being a part of that is wonderful, but they do get breaks. So they can get to do their number and then take a break. So I don't think that playing baby is as challenging physically because there isn't as much demand on the body or dance, but it's much more challenging emotionally.
Mentally, because you're on. You're
it's
on.
It's quite a roller coaster. Yeah. She goes through a lot. So by the end of the night, I forget how tiring it is. Yeah. But
has,
it's a blast.
Has Jennifer Grey caught a performance here in Los Angeles?
Or, I don't think so. No? I don't think so.
Well, that's funny because we have her right here. Ladies
Jennifer,
and gentlemen.
Come on in.
I would freak
this
out.
This is your life, Rachel.
You know what's funny? I think, and I don't know if this is true or if either of you know if this is true, but I'm told that in the film there's a moment which, and I'm not calling out the film separate because you do it in the play as well. But when he's dragging his caressing her arm, and she laughs, I was told that that's actually an outtake from the film.
Yes.
That he did tickle her and she reacted that way. And you see Swayze actually get a little irritated by the fact that she did laugh.
Well, the story goes, it was at the end of a very long day and they were very, very tired and they were just trying to get the shot. And the shot did not include her laughing. But when people are tired, you know, it's just, you could, there's
punchy,
only so much you can take.
Yeah, yeah.
And so apparently she kept breaking. And he was very genuinely frustrated because he wanted to be done with his work day.
He just wanted, okay.
But so. Now it's one of the most... the best, one of the best moments in the film.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's so genuine and real.
And that's the other thing, too. And how do you, you know, we always talk on the show about, and it's so trite. And it's just one of those things we just keep talking about, which we shouldn't talk about. How do you make it your own when it's an established film? And how do you do the, you know, which any actor who's worth their salt is going to make it their own because they're their own performer. But that being said, you also have reactions that you're getting that are due in great part to the memory of it, of having people seen it. Does that affect your portrayal at all? Does it affect what you do? Do you sort of know it's there and play with it, or is it just like gravy from this is a very obscure question
based on the audience
and a very long one.
Yes, it is. It is. I should have scripted that one. Sorry.
I mean, I think I've seen other girls play baby, and I've seen other understudies play baby, and no matter who you are as a person, you're going to do it differently just based on what your background is and what your personality is like. So I've got to see a lot of different versions as well as the movie. And I did watch the movie a lot in auditions, but I haven't watched it since.
Okay.
So I'm hoping that, you know, some of that dims down. And I just think if you're doing your best to live honestly in the moment based on the person opposite you in your scene, then it's going to be it's going to be similar because of the script and because we've all set it up, but it's going to be honest. And as long as it's honest, then I think it's fine either way.
Yeah. And you do accomplish that. And both of you do. And the show in general does, because even though it honors that film that we know, there's never any sense of replication or copying. It's its own thing.
Yeah,
it's its own entity, which is quite an accomplishment.
You know, because
that's not always the case.
Right. You know? Right. I just wanted to say something. I thought of this as we were speaking. We're talking about Chris Tierney. The only competition Chris has is the wax figure in the lobby of Mr. Patrick Swayze.
Yes.
I might add. And my goodness, people lined up. I mean, lines to have their photos taken with that.
That's, I know, isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
That's a tad, I got to tell you.
But
that's a tad off-putting to me.
Well, and our writer came out, Eleanor Bergstein, and she actually didn't like that. And I hadn't thought about what it would have been like to actually know Patrick Swayze and then see a very lifelike replica of him and how unnerving that would be. But people love it.
Well,
it makes for a good photo op.
It is. That's just it.
And they're represented also at the Pantages on most opening nights somehow, if it's appropriate to, you know, what's on stage there. So, yeah, it's pretty amazing to see him.
It was very cool to see.
I actually considered, you know, having a photo taken, but I was a little – I thought, oh, gee, you know – why? And you know, I thought it's here, but I didn't. I
and you know,
let
the thing,
people go ahead.
The Pantages. We've seen so many shows at the Pantages, and there's such a vibe, a great vibe, as you walk up, because the show is before the show. It's you. the evening is what you're there for. So they always have the people over in the forecourt. There's people taking pictures and this stuff in the lobby. And you walk into that lobby. And also, you know what? I want to say this, too, because they changed this policy. And I think this is great. I used to go into the Pantages and there were like these little minions running around saying, don't take any pictures. Don't take any pictures. Don't, even before the show started. You used to really crack the whip with that. And they've totally relaxed that now, which I think is great. Because before the show, who wouldn't want to take a picture of that room and that gorgeous ceiling and all that beautiful work? So it's, I'm glad that they sort of relaxed on that because it's, it makes for a nicer evening.
Yeah, well, it's such a grand and elegant theater. And it just oozes of energy when there's anything in it anyway. So
this is also a question. Speaking of that, this is a question I find for people. You've been on the road for this for a while. Does it change your... looking out into the house, obviously you can't see much. You got the lights and everything. But is there sort of a feel like when you've done it as frequently as you have, is it all about portrayal or does the room really help flavor or mood or anything? Does it change like with venues, your feel?
I think the audience reactions change based on what city we're in. It's really interesting to see how some cities react to certain moments and how other cities react to different moments. Because one city may consistently always have a huge reaction at this place and you go somewhere else and you don't get anything.
That's
so
funny,
it's great for an actor because you can't rely on that.
Right,
and you're
right.
Also, you're not doing it for the laugh, but it's just interesting to see like what lands and what doesn't based on where you are.
That's very interesting.
Can you cite any cities in particular where that was different?
I'm still getting used to it because, quite honestly, I didn't tune into them as much dancing in the ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, being baby, there are specific moments that the audience reacts to. But right now, I'm just so focused on doing the right thing at the right time that
which
I haven't really gotten to notice it much.
Yeah.
So I'll have to pay attention to that coming into the future.
So, I mean, it might be a little different in Iowa as
opposed
to... Right,
exactly.
Yeah.
And honestly, the smaller cities, I think... like the middle of nowhere cities are the most excited, enthusiastic audiences we have.
Oh, sure. Yeah, because there's still a sense of event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are not jaded. Like in L.A., everyone's brother has written a screenplay and, you know.
Although they've been great here. Our audiences here have been wonderful.
Yeah.
Very
oh, no. I mean, yeah, but I mean, you know how it can get. People can get a little,
right.
You know, urban people can get a little bitchy.
Jaded.
We know, you know.
Canadians love Dirty Dancing on stage.
Oh, yeah?
Canadians love it? Great.
Love it.
Well, you could see Dirty Dance. That's what we're talking about here. And let me throw this information out one more time before we start to wrap things up here. This is Dirty Dancing live on stage, the classic story on stage, I should say, at the gorgeous Hollywood Pantages Theater. That's 6233 Hollywood Boulevard. And the parking, you know what? The parking thing on that corner is not there, but there's parking now right up above in a complex just north of the Pantages.
Right.
So
just right across the street, yeah.
Depending on where you come in, it's good to
or
know
their
to do
Pantages
that.
Or Pantages has their own parking behind, smaller lot.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. And as we've said and said before, this is not common in Los Angeles that you can go for the evening and park and have dining options right around you. This is one of the theaters where you have that. In a lot of places in L.A., you don't. So get there early and eat nearby and go see the show. Tickets online, HollywoodPantages.com or Ticketmaster, or you could call 800-982-2787. That's 800-982-2787. And what a hoot that was. Also, before we start to wrap this up with asking our guests to share their tales
we
of
have
woe,
to baptize them.
We were talking with a couple of people from the Pantages earlier, and they have something coming up which sounds very, very exciting. It's called The Illusionist.
Oh, yes.
It opens February 23rd and runs till March 13th, and it was described as sort of a family magic variety show, but the young lady who was telling me about it went into more detail about it, and it sounds just very unusual and like a whole lot of fun. And whenever they talk about these family things, you immediately think like, oh, it's going to be, you know, just kind of vanilla, but this is not at all. And it just you know, because everyone thinks family, it's just going to be safe, but with this many magicians and all of them having their own specialty, it sounds like a lot of fun. I'll definitely be there for this. Maybe you can get me to opening night to this one.
Possibly if you behave.
Or and in this city. What a pleasure having you both on. We're sort of at that time, but we wanted to ask you, Rachel, if you would start for us. a tale of woe, something that has happened during a performance, something that went south, some less than stellar moment for you.
There are so many.
Oh, well, and, share a couple. We got time.
Not restricted to this show. It could be any show.
Yeah, I think probably the best. I tend to be unbalanced as a human being. And so falling is a frequent occurrence in shows, and it just happens a lot.
You're a klutz, is what you're saying.
I am. I'm a genuine klutz.
Okay.
But if you can imagine, set the scene, if you will, Cats. You mentioned that I did the non-union tour of Cats. It was the last year, and in the show, there's a scene where all the cats freak out when McCavity is here. And I was on for Demeter, and Demeter has to freak out probably the most because she's terrified of McCavity. She yells McCavity, and everyone scurries off stage. All, meanwhile, like in a cat unitard full face. And there's a trunk that you have to run up. It's a big and large car trunk, and it has two dents in it that if you time it just right, you can put one foot in a dent, another foot in a dent, and then you're up off your way. But, you know, invariably, if you miss the dent, it's quite bad, and you're one of the last people to leave the stage. So everyone else has scurried, and I went to run up the trunk and just hit it and completely missed. Slapped, like, if you can think of, like, a flat kitty on the trunk that just slid down to the ground.
Oh.
And there was one
like a cartoon.
Yeah, it was very cartoonish.
It's musical roadkill.
Just perfect timing. Slap, slide. There was one cat behind me, and thank goodness for him. All of a sudden, I feel somebody's hand on my rump just push me back up.
Push you back up.
And all of a sudden, I'm, like, on all fours, and I crawl off the stage.
Now,
I've fallen a lot, and normally there's someone close by to rescue me, thank goodness.
Now, let me ask you this. Was that so – was there laughter?
I don't know. Okay. I hope not. Perhaps. I didn't. I wasn't listening for it. I was too busy trying to recover.
Oh. Yeah, it could be just something the audience thought was – part of the show.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, spastic cat slides down a trunk.
Isabella, the spastic cat.
Exactly.
Doug, you got one for us?
Mine actually is from my very first Equity show, and it was at Civic Light Opera, the South Bay Cities, which is now defunct, I think, actually.
No, it's not.
Are they back again?
Yeah, well, 3D Theatricals has taken that.
Well, but theory, different companies.
Yes,
but they're in the same spaces.
Rescued the redundant beast performing.
Right. Yes, okay. So back when it was CLSBC, my very first show, Cinderella, I was playing the prince. We were doing the ball scene, and then all of a sudden Cinderella disappears, and I turn around to go upstage, and I realize there is no slipper upstage on the big stairs, which is a kind of a pivotal moment in Cinderella.
Yeah.
He gets the shoe.
Yeah.
And so I walk up there, and I'm trying to decide. I'm very, very green. I'm trying to decide, what do I do? And so I start looking off. You know, it's like maybe I'll see the slipper somewhere off stage or something like that. And then I'm like, well, maybe I'll just go down and I'll pantomime there being a slipper. And all of a sudden, kunk, 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 the stagehand had just thrown the slipper back on to the stage.
Oh, my
God. So I reached down and grabbed it, and the laughter just exploded.
Just threw it out there.
Just threw it, just like, just big clunks, like, onto the stage. A whole audience just went up in laughter. It was, it was pretty funny.
Oh, that's priceless.
That is funny. Did you, either of you, see this new incarnation of Cinderella that's touring?
Yes,
I did.
I loved it because it's a totally, you know, smart take on it. And some of those kinds of things. You know, I mean, that
it would have worked in that show.
Exactly.
This one was a very like, you know, old style Cinderella show.
Have either of you seen the clip is online and it's running in London right now? But the play that goes wrong. Have you heard about this?
No.
There's this show in London called The Play That Goes Wrong, and it is everything. It's like a comedy of errors, but everything that could technically go wrong.
Oh, that's
it's
brilliant.
Like noises off times 10. And there's like an 8 to 9 minute clip where they did a performance for a royal audience. I think it was a fundraiser or something. And if the 8 and 9 minutes are any indication, crying, laughing so hard,
really?
Watching this thing.
Wow.
And now they have a new one that's running concurrently with it in London right now. Kim Muller Van Leeuwen was telling me about this, called the Peter Pan That Goes Wrong. So they have Peter Pan.
I've seen some of those in real life.
Yeah. But this is, but it sounds, it is hysterical. And I'll send you the clip, Michael. You'll be.
Is it a panto or?
No, it's just, it's like a, the play that they do is The Murder at Haversham Manor. And it's one of these things. But the guy comes out at the very beginning, he goes, As you can see, we have a larger budget than we normally have, and we're very excited that this is we're able to do a higher end production than last year's season of James and the Peach, and of course our summer musical Cat. So that sort of like gives you an idea of where you're. But howling at Laughing Soul. Yeah, the play that goes wrong. Watch the clip. We'll send you the link with that. We have 2 minutes. Can you share another tale? Do you have another one at the ready?
I mean, I was doing a children's show of a not Disney version of Beauty and the Beast, and I had a quick change to a track record. So we didn't have an orchestra that could bide me time, and I didn't make the change very well, and I had to change from stage manager to bell, and my bodice didn't get snapped to my skirt, and I had to sing a solo, and these are children, and I'm quickly becoming unclothed as my clothes are falling off of me, and that was horrifying on my end. I hope that they didn't get it. I had to hold my skirt and finish the solo and then run off and quickly get changed. But costume malfunctions, wigs falling off, it's all happened. Yeah.
I would imagine that there's a lot of accidents that are dictated by having to stick to a track because it just, you got to get out there. There's no vamping. There's no nothing.
had to make your mark.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's been a hoot.
Thank you, guys.
What a pleasure.
Because we know you have to work tonight, but thank you for sharing the afternoon with us.
And thank you, Alex Scolari, who we had on earlier. And my apologies for calling you Lisa. And also we want to thank the mention that I did of the young lady who I mentioned earlier who didn't join us today but is so wonderful in the show.
Adrian Walker,
yes.
Indeed. And one more time, ladies and gentlemen, put down those remotes and your cell phones and go to see live theater. Starting, if you haven't seen it before or if you have, go to see Dirty Dancing. You will have, as I'm going to say it again, the time of your life. About this wonderful film that is now appearing on stage through February 21st.
And immediately after that, February 23rd, The Illusionists running through March 13th.
There you go.
Family magic variety show.
Rachel, Doug, thank you so much for joining Paul and I.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A real pleasure. Michael, good to be back.
Thank you. Always nice to have you here. See you on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.